Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son.
Happy birthday,
Polly. Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 139. 139, yeah, we're almost at 140. How about that? Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Bones coming at you on a Sunday, the last day of April, of March. First day of April is tomorrow, so last March podcast. This is no longer March.
Rip.
Tomorrow's April Fool's Day.
Where does John Rothstein go? Like, you know where Mel Kiper goes, like, whenever the draft is done? Where does John Rothstein go when March is over?
He becomes certainly less relevant than Mel Kiper Jr. becomes.
He just vanishes into the ether. Like, his body takes a mist-like form and just goes into the sky.
That's what I imagine.
Or he has those boots he hangs up to a pull-up bar and then hangs upside down and just hibernates like that for 11 months.
Like a fucking cocoon.
Just like a bat, like a vampire bat. I'm not saying he's a vampire, but
You're saying he's a vampire bat.
No, I said it was like a vampire bat.
Okay.
I like John Rothstein a lot, but it's, we say this is March and this is the biggest month of the year for someone like him and what he covers, but he's on it all year round. He never gives up the hustle.
What's his quote? The unexpected quote, where the unexpected becomes the ordinary. Is that it?
Mm-hmm. And then he has a Fortune 500 company, a well-oiled machine, some other Rothsteinisms. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like the guy. He's very self-aware, which is always good.
He's a robot.
Extremely blessed, though, but Mel Kiper is extremely cursed. When he goes away, I get happy. When Rothstein goes away, I get sad.
Mel Kiper reeks. He stinks.
Well,
that guy fucking stinks. He does those regrades of drafts every year. He just released his recently. This is not like it's a new thing, but we'll use last year, for example. He panned the Baker Mayfield pick the second it was made, and he just regraphed it and gave the Browns an A, and not a peep of, I was wrong on this one, folks. I whiffed. He is the worst.
The NFL draft is something that just needs about 1/20th of the coverage it actually gets.
Exactly.
It is them needing something to do in April, and it just gets over covered. By the time you get to the actual draft, you're just so tired. And then now they're going to different cities. This year it's in Nashville.
Yep.
That famous NFL draft location.
It's going to be in Canton. I think the next year after that, we'll be at the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Where are they doing it in Nashville? Are they going to do it outside like they did in Philly, or are they going to do it in the Ryman, the church of country music?
I don't know. I actually don't know that.
Philip Rivers shows up with his 10-gallon, 5-gallon, whatever gallon hat.
10-gallon hat and a bolo tie. Bolo tie to match.
Speaking of 10-gallon hats and bolo ties, Brendan Fraser, a video was tweeted of him by the @NASCAR Twitter account. He was fucking feeling himself. Pumped.
Are you kidding? This is Texas Motor Speedway. I get to drive the 2019 Silverado. That's a cool piece of gear. What are you doing this Sunday?
King shit. You look great.
He's mounting the comeback. I feel it. It's a slow build. He's doing this very intelligently. We'd expect nothing less.
Anything else cooking? Any irons in the fire in the last week?
Did you see where I actually like this a lot, but Microsoft as a company sent out an email saying nobody's doing an April Fool's joke this year. So nobody's doing an outwardly facing April Fool's joke. And I appreciate that because companies doing April Fool's jokes, I don't like anymore. That was like a 2010 thing. It was real funny when Google is like now introducing the Google pancake toaster Alexa combination. And everybody laughs about it and everybody in the tech industry shares it. But now it's just like, okay, like we want to hear less from you guys.
Yeah, I you know someone's going to do it tomorrow and it'll be like a food thing like, hey, poop Doritos. And then you get the five people who believe it and then it goes viral for 10 minutes and then that's that. But I like that. I like just coming out and saying we're releasing only real stuff tomorrow.
Let's say we're releasing the Young Sheldon review or something. Something benign.
Were we coming? Is this our official statement that we're not going to make any April Fool's jokes? We make enough April Fool's jokes basically to begin with the slap videos.
Well, our entire podcast is a joke. Am I right?
Yeah, Alice? Folks, take my wife.
Yeah. Oh, what a thing.
Anti-April Fool's.
Oh. Hey, hickory dickory duck.
I started playing Sekiro. I already hate it. This is a terrible recommendation by Trill, who has said nothing but sing its praises and coaxed me into buying it and say it's really easy to beat. The storyline's great, and I can't beat it. I finally got past Juzo the Drunkard. Can't get past this Chained Ogre or any of the other guys that are holding off the attachments for the arm thing. It's very frustrating.
Vent? You gotta get the flame vent for the
ogre. Yeah, man, I got it. I got the flame vent still for the hard. Ogre, but I'm still trying to get the ninja that's in that same manner in that dream sequence, but I can't get him.
You know, it brings up a good point. This game's been getting universal acclaim. People love it. Fans of the Bloodborne and Dark Souls series love this game. They love the difficulty. But at what point for casuals like us, is this just too much? Is this just bad game design for someone like me? Or do I just need to get good?
Or is Trill Bolens a secret executive from Software who coerced Ken Jack into buying the game? And
you did.
Spending $70.
Everything about this game is so oppressively designed, though. From the atmosphere to the combat system to the saving, or I guess the resting, regenerating the enemies, and then having to go back entire 10-minute sequences just to die in 15 seconds. It is just designed to be hard. And to that, I say some people like that, but I think that's just being difficult on purpose instead of actually making something, I don't know, accessible. But that's all I say. I suck. So what do I know?
Yeah, so that's that. Things coming up. We have Timothy Simons or Tim Simons. I think I actually asked him before the interview, do we call you Tim or Timothy? And he said Tim, and then I immediately called him Timothy. We'll have to listen back to the tapes. But I'm pretty sure I fucked that one up. Veep coming back tonight. Or if you're listening to this, it's already out if you're listening to this. We interviewed him about his character Jonah and Veep. Also, Draft Day. Told us a really good story about Draft Day and how offended teams would get over certain details in Draft Day and they had to cater to the NFL. So that was fun. We're going to be reviewing Dumbo and the Beach Bum this week, both movies that most people I've heard say are terrible, especially Dumbo. Most people I've heard talk about Dumbo have said it reeks. Sounds like a big Disney dud there. Upcoming reviews. Also, Avengers Endgame tickets coming out on Tuesday, so set those alarms. Upcoming reviews, though, Shazam the week after next, followed by Hellboy, and then The Curse of La Llorona, and then Avengers Endgame with guest Mr. Sunday Movies, followed by Long Shot with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, and then Detective Pikachu, and then John Wick Chapter 3, Aladdin to end the month of May. And we start the month of June with Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and Rocket Man. And then we have Dark Phoenix and then Men in Black International. Those are our next 12 reviews, which actually feature 14 movies.
It's a great lineup.
Except for The Curse of La Llorona.
That might be a core to Trill.
Ooh. You don't want to watch The Curse of La Llorona?
I do, actually. It's no idea what the movie's about. I know it's about a curse, so start there.
That has the distinct pleasure of being the first horror movie we see after Us. So we're gonna have them. We're gonna be raring up, ready to go for that one.
Support our queen, Linda Cardellini. Trill, go see it.
She's in The Curse of La Llorona.
Pretty sure, right?
You know what? Don't look it up. We're gonna say yes.
I'm looking it up.
we're just gonna say she's in. She's in it. I have just stated she's in it.
Yep, correct.
Actually,
she is.
So Linda Cardellini's in two movies in a row for us because she's in Avengers Endgame.
Oh, true. Is she have a speaking role in it, or is she just going to be like in a picture being dead?
Oh, I mean, we have. Well, she's in the background in that trailer with Hawkeye shooting the bows and arrows with his daughter. So she's definitely in it. She's definitely going to die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big dead.
Linda Carnelli is going to die on screen in Avengers, or excuse me, be snapped. They don't use the word death. All right. This episode brought to you in part by Stitch Fix. That's right. Our good friends over at Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. Just go to stitchfix.com/lights and tell them your sizes, what styles you like, and how much you want to spend on each item. You'll be paired with your very own personal stylist who will handpick 5 items to send right to your door. Try them on, pay only for what you love, return the rest. Shipping exchanges, always free. Plenty of different brands. Nike, Banana Republic, Lululemon, quarter zips, guys, right? Plenty of quarter zips. Does quarter zip season reactivate in between spring and summer? Like right around now that's warming up in the Northeast?
Oh, it's quarter zip season between September, depending on where you live, and April, I feel like.
Okay.
And you know, even in the summer months at night, you might want to put on a quarter zip. It gets chilly by the beach, by the lake house. If you're at the lake, everybody goes to the lake during the weekends in the summer. We're going to the lake. Which lake? I don't know, folks. Oh.
What the fuck was that? What?
That was in the ad copy from Stitch Fix. Good read, Trill.
I'm just working on my 1990s style observational humor. Is there anything wrong with that?
No, not at all. Stitch Fix's styling fee is only $20, which is applied toward anything you keep from your shipment, including if you want any gear for the lake. Get started now at stitchfix.com/lights, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/lights to get started today. stitchfix.com/lights. So again, we have an interview with Tim Simons, very tall man. Kenjack and him kind of saw eye to eye, which is rare. Usually Kenjack towers over our guests.
Big fact. I'm 6'5". Many people forget this, but he's like 6'9". Must be minimum.
He confirmed you're tall in the beginning of the interview. So.
He did. Stick around. He does confirm I'm both tall and handsome. Big fact.
Just saying. All right. Couple trailers. This is like basically horror movies and comic book movies we have here. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. First teaser for this, based off a book. I never read the book, but I know a lot of people did. And Guillermo del Toro wrote the screenplay for this.
A generational thing, you think? This book was hot when I was in elementary school. It was always checked out of the library.
No, because a lot of kids around my age growing up also like this, but I'm not a big reader. Actually, there's multiple books, right? I don't know if this is based on the first book or just the first book or any of the other, but I'm pretty sure it's just the first book.
I think it's just like a collection of short stories.
Yeah, but I know there's multiple books, though.
I don't know.
Regardless or irregardless, I don't know which one. This is a horror movie coming out, and it looks pretty fucking creepy. Guillermo del Toro, man, he does have a knack for visuals with things that are scary, because there are a lot of disturbing-looking things in this trailer, for sure. I'm looking forward to seeing this cautiously. But I assume this could be pretty good if Guillermo del Toro has his hands in it.
Yeah, I'd say my excitement level for this is that feeling you get when you're waiting for Uber Eats to come, but it's something that you don't really love. So like you're still getting food, but it's not exactly what you want. That's how I feel about it. I'm just I don't hate it. I don't know how I feel. Horror movies this year, I'm just not into the horror movies this year. I know we loved Us, but I think it was more the second trailer we'll talk about that I watched this and it's just like, I don't ever want to see another horror movie again.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as you, I would say. The big difference here, obviously, is Guillermo del Toro, who's like a visionary artist, like Jeff just said. And he is definitely the major draw for me personally, because the visual aspect of it is sometimes the biggest part with horror movies. And I think that he's really good in weaving in like interesting narratives that are really creative and not sort of stereotyped for the horror genre. So that's definitely where it gets me, but it's still a horror movie. So I go in with like a little bit of a hesitation.
Anything that isn't Pacific Rim 3 is just taking away from GDT's time in my mind.
Yeah, keep it.
I want to see some more kaiju fights.
What a fucking drop off with his lack of involvement in the second Pacific. I mean, that movie was a memorable theater going experience because I remember we really wanted to leave. That was a hard one to stay through. That was so unpleasant to watch.
It was long.
I'll revise what I said about horror movies. I still like horror movies. I think that with this one, I really want to see how the reviews do because it has the chance to go either way. I'm a little hesitant because it's based off of a children's book, so it has that playing for nostalgia factor, which admittedly I fall for. But at the same time, it's GDT, so I'm looking forward to it too. So I'll revise my statement and say, yeah, I think you could do worse.
Remember when Charlie Day had sex with the kaiju with his brain?
Yeah, I have a poster of that scene on my wall.
What would you do? Would you like a Guillermo del Toro Evangelion movie?
I don't know. I don't know. As an adult, I really want to go back and watch Evangelion because it's been maybe 19 years since I've watched it. It's almost been 20 years since I've seen it. And stuff that I thought was really cool as a 15-year-old probably isn't cool anymore. But he's proven he can do big robots fighting monsters. So you just change that. And instead of sea creatures, they're hell demons.
Yeah, instead of Shinji, it's Ansel Elgort piloting it.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, so Scary Stories in the Dark, that comes out. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, that comes out August 9th, 2019.
Okay. I like that. We, you know, they got some separation now. We got time to look forward to it. I think that's good. I think that's good. Uh-huh.
It sounds like you're talking yourself into this.
I am. I'm trying to be real positive about this.
There's another horror movie trailer that we have, and that is Annabelle Comes Home. That's right. The Conjuring Universe, which we will talk about here in a second. Paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren keep a possessed doll locked up in an artifacts room in their house. When the doll awakens the room's evil spirits, it soon becomes a night of terror for the couple's young daughter and her friends. This is once again starring Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. Again, Conjuring Universe, we'll talk about the Conjuring Universe in a second, but what did you think about the trailer?
I just think anytime you can do a movie involving a creepy child, you got to do it. You got to take that risk and just think outside the box. What are the rules for having a creepy child in a movie? Like, the first one is they can't be dressed like a normal 2019 child. They can't be wearing a sports jersey or, you know, just normal pants. They got to be wearing like what children would wear in the 1950s. So for a boy, it has to be like, you have to be dressed like the dummy from Goosebumps. And for a girl, you have to be dressed essentially like an American Girl doll. You got really strict rules about children in horror movies. The second one is they got to say some sort of nursery rhyme at some point. Or you got to use a happy song like Somewhere Over the Rainbow in the trailer and make it real creepy. So I hit the major marks there. You love to see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think kids are probably the scariest thing that you can have in horror movies. But maybe, again, the very personal exception of nuns. Nuns scare me. Don't know what it is about them. But children are very creepy. I think you're right, Trill. You can't have a kid walking around in like a Thrasher hoodie or something. It's just not scary. Disarms you.
They can't be wearing, like, it can't be The Omen, and Damien can't be wearing an Aaron Rodgers jersey because that would take you right out of the movie.
Just wearing like an Obey snapback just doesn't work.
Yeah,
absolutely does not work.
A Fortnite hoodie with the default skin doing the Carlton. I like the Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga characters. I'm glad to see them back. The trailer, I didn't love the trailer because it was. If you made a cliche of all child-centric horror movies, this trailer would be it. Like I said, you got Somewhere Over the Rainbow, creepy version of that. You got the kid wanting to play. The kid's always wanting to play. That's the creepiest thing for a kid in a horror movie. He's just saying, do you want to play? Like Chucky will say that at some point. And then you have the huge jump scare at the end.
Yeah, there was a big jump scare. Like a really drawn-out jump scare.
Mm.
Very drawn out, like almost an entire scene from a movie at the end of the trailer.
Well, horror movies are, and movie trailers now like to do almost a post-credit scene in their trailer where you get past the title card and who's starring in it. Then you have a post-credit scene right there in the trailer, and it was the post-credit scene of this trailer.
I wonder who the first movie to do that was, what the first movie to do that was. The most memorable one for me was Chewie, We're Home at the end of The Force Awakens. That was like a big stinger moment. And then they didn't do it for the second trailer. And then they didn't really have one for The Last Jedi. Avengers has done that a couple times. They did that last year with the Guardians of the Galaxy, where they had it was Thor showing up saying, "Who the hell are you guys?" They just did that again with Thor. So yeah, I'm curious who started that trend. It could not have been The Force Awakens.
No, it could
have been a thing invented in 2015.
J.J. Abrams had to have a huge bag of money in one of those folding director chairs off screen for Harrison Ford to look at just to him to consider saying that line. it had the money sign on it too.
So it's just like a giant bowl of diamond stud earrings. He's like, "So I'll say anything."
Oh God. Okay.
Good impression.
Speaking of horror movies, by the way, I did forget. Somebody pointed out on our Twitter that we are going to review Pet Sematary. Just going to figure out what date that's going to go in. Okay, so Conjuring Universe. This is how the Conjuring Universe works. There's the three Conjuring movies. The Conjuring, The Conjuring 2, and The Conjuring 3, which comes out in 2020. There's the Annabelle series. Annabelle, Annabelle Creation, and then Annabelle Comes Home. Then there's the spinoff movies, The Nun, The Curse of La Llorona, and then The Crooked Man, which has been announced. No date, though. And it goes,
I'm the Crooked Man.
Starring Hillary Clinton.
That's his. Oh, man.
Got it out.
Oh, my God. It's the Crooked Man. I can see you. I'm crooked.
He talks like a Lonely Island, the weird guy.
Woo! I'm the crooked man.
Not the totally normal guy here.
Totally normal crooked guy.
So the Conjuring Universe timeline goes: The Nun took place in 1952. Annabelle took place in the late 1955. Annabelle Creation did. Annabelle took place in 1967. Then The Conjuring, 1971. And then TBD dates between 1971 and the 80s, Annabelle Comes Home and The Curse of La Llorona, and then The Conjuring 2 in the 60s and the 70s, and then The Conjuring 3 and The Crooked Man. Nobody knows yet. So,
The Crooked Man.
Do you give any shits about this universe here?
The Conjuring universe. Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga's characters, because I like the first Conjuring and that maybe the second one they're in. And if the series haven't really involved, I just like their presence together in these movies. So the more it involves them, the more I care about it. But based on this trailer, I have a hard time getting into this Annabelle specific story just because I think that I'm over. We talk about like they're using kids a lot in movies, and kids horror movies kind of started that trend. I feel like, it's always been around because of The Omen, but ever since The Ring, I really feel like creepy kids have just, the market for that's just exploded.
Yeah, it has, but isn't it also a little oversaturated right now?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just give it a break, and it's a movie will probably do really well. The other Conjuring movies have done really well. What did The Nun do? I mean, even The Nun probably did okay.
Yeah, they had good money. Also, there's the James Gunn one. Was it Brightburn? Is that his creepy kid?
Yeah, that one's coming out. Yeah, which is like a kind of like a super. Yeah, by the way, The Nun made box office. The budget made like $340 million.
What?
Yeah, King, it made $365 million box office, $22 million budget.
What? King shit.
I thought it was going to be like $7 million budget, $80 million box office.
Yeah, made a lot of money.
Okay, so obviously there's a huge market for these creepy movies. Maybe we're not it for the kids specific movies, but people love them, folks.
People do. Yeah, people do love them. But
I'm just wondering what the Crooked Man will do. I'm real excited about this Crooked Man character.
James Wan not returning for Conjuring 3, though. So
Crooked Man lives in a haunted chiropractor's office.
Please adjust me.
Looks the Crooked Man.
Next up, two DC pieces of news. Captain Boomerang, Jai Courtney, back for Suicide Squad 2, or whatever they're going to call it. Sure.
Okay.
What about Rick Flagg?
Colonel Rick Flagg. Actually, he's a major now, I think, at the end of the movie.
So is it the other piece of news that Leto might be back for Suicide Squad 2?
The other piece is that no, for Birds of Prey, he put something either on Instagram, I believe, of a clown face emoji, and people are thinking that he is back as the Joker in Birds of Prey.
He's just the full title. Big Bryce Harper fan, turns out.
Full title, Trill.
The Fantabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn, right?
Maybe. You might be right.
Is it the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn? Right?
I thought it was something, something, and the Fantabulous Emancipation.
Yeah, Birds of Prey.
And okay, yeah. Yeah, it's the full title there. So they're walking that back. They said they weren't really going to have anyone returning for Suicide Squad, and slowly but surely they're bringing people back into the fold. And by that, I mean one person.
Yeah, so I guess they're just not going to recast Deadshot. That just means, well, we already knew they were going to do a whole different group of villains, but I thought that they were going to maybe fold some of the older ones in with the recast, because you could recast like fucking Killer Croc, whatever. Who cares? Like,
but you can't recast Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, that's the one.
He's the glue that keeps the team coming back together.
Like a boomerang.
Yep.
I don't know if that was on purpose, but yeah, you nailed it.
Yep. You got it.
Right.
So yeah, I don't have much of an opinion on
Kyle Dundee for Captain Boomerang.
I don't really have much of an opinion on either of them, but if I had to have a strong opinion on either of them, it would be that I just don't think Leto should be back as a Joker ever again.
The weird thing is, like, I think he's not a bad Joker. It's just, I don't think it's the right time for him to be a Joker again, with so many Joker things out, and with like the still Heath Ledger's performance still so fresh in everyone's mind, which is what everyone said after they announced him in Suicide Squad. I think it needs some time before he can have his Joker moment again.
Mm. You might be right. For this generation, the benchmark is Heath Ledger. And that's an impossible bar to climb over. So you got to do what they're doing with the Todd Phillips Joker movie, is that they're putting it in a different setting.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that like Nolan's universe and the Suicide Squad universe are anything like each other, but they're both modern day. And the Phoenix Joker is somewhat of an 80s or 90s period piece.
Yeah.
And I think that adds a little bit of interest to it for me.
I agree completely. The fact that it's totally detached from all that, it gives you that degree of separation from the older or other iterations of the Joker.
Yeah. The Joker.
Good old Joker.
Want to see a magic trick?
That's my impression.
That was good. It's not bad.
See, the pencil's gone, folks.
My Xbox gamer tag is 007 underscore Joker 420.
So Joker's wild.
Really appropriate.
Release date moved up for China. Avengers Endgame might open up with $800 million plus on the first weekend, which would smash the previous record, which the previous movie holds, Avengers Infinity War, by I think like $150 million. So it might make close to a billion on the first weekend. I still think I think it's going to beat Force Awakens. I think it has an outside shot at beating Titanic. No shot at beating Avatar. I don't think it has any shot at beating Avatar, but I think it has an outside shot at beating Titanic.
Do you think Avatar 2 will even come close to Avatar?
Yes, I think it'll make $2 billion.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah,
probably. I think the hype, James Cameron, no matter how much I would fight him in a boxing ring, I didn't say go hand to hand. I feel like he's really good, you know, in bizarre climates. But
you cannot fight him underwater. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. See, I don't want to give him the chance to go fight me underwater. He is a marketing genius. So I do think it's going to,
that is true. He's a genius. He's a genius all around. He's very easy to make fun of because his hobbies are very peculiar.
Well, the problem is he's a genius and he knows he's a genius.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's true.
That's that issue. That's true. And the Russo brothers have come out and said to see it the first weekend, that there are many more spoiler moments in this one than in Infinity War.
Oh.
So not worth waiting. Not worth having it spoiled.
A little permadeath?
Maybe.
Maybe a little permadeath. What was I going to say? It was about
James Cameron's good at marriage.
How did the original or how did Infinity War do in China?
Infinity War box office.
Better than China. Star Wars, I remember correctly.
Star Wars, sure. Get the dog overseas. It, maybe just in that market, it does not do well.
It made $360 million in China. Okay.
Damn. I wonder, did they add any scenes? Because they do that with the Iron Man movies.
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know that one for sure.
Ask Donnie.
Yeah, he would know. Yeah, I don't know that one for sure. It made domestically $678 million, $1.4 billion overseas.
What's the Chinese title going to be for Endgame? You should ask Donnie. Shoot him a FaceTime right now and take those roaming charges while he's in Dubai or wherever he is.
Yeah, he's somewhere. I don't know, but they did release the Chinese poster, which the Chinese poster is the best poster.
Oh, it's so cool. So cool.
Yeah, because it has all the snapped characters at the bottom. Oh, man. I mean, the title's on the poster. It looks like, there's a number 4 in it, Avengers 4. But I don't know what they called it. Yeah, very, very cool poster. So that's exciting. Ken, Jack, and I are skipping radio. I think we said this the other day. I went and asked PFT. I'm like, hey, we have a chance to go see the movie at 10 a.m. as opposed to 6 p.m. on the 23rd. I think we're just going to miss radio. And he said, sure. So we're gonna know it in advance, and we're going to flex with that. We're going to make sure people know we know.
Yeah. Me, everything that happens,
and we will an entire dissertation, a 10-page analysis of the movie, scene by scene. Yeah, you're gonna know everything. Are you gonna ask us immediately when it's over?
I'll probably show some restraint, maybe wait an hour or two.
That's good. Yeah.
A little bit of restraint.
Oh man. Okay, so there's your first bit of news. This episode is brought to you in part by ShipStation. That's right, ShipStation. As you know, we love our merch here at Barstool. Go buy your Balloon Jerry. By the way, we haven't released the Big Dog shirt yet.
We started going to do that like months ago.
Well, I mean, the hype has not been drummed up enough to release the Big Dog shirt.
Mm.
So when the hype hits again, maybe we'll release it.
You know, I did post a, a Big Dogs meme recently, and I had like the first four or five responses to it were, where is the LCB Big Dog shirt?
Hmm.
So, okay. Still around.
Okay. Yeah, so anyway, you know, we love merch, but shipping out merch to everyone is a real pain. Excuse me, as this says, a real pain in the ass and freaking expensive. When should we use UPS, FedEx, post office? It's confusing. Then we found ShipStation, number one choice of online sellers like us. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to get you your Barstool merchandise or anything you buy. With ShipStation, you can ship out a lot more stuff in a lot less time for a lot less money. ShipStation helps get orders out quickly and keep our grumpy-ass customers happy. Ah, they're not grumpy. Great people. Whether you're selling on your own website or Amazon, Shopify, Squarespace, Etsy, et cetera, ShipStation brings all the orders into one simple interface. Right now, try ShipStation free for 30 days and get an additional month free only if you use our promo code LIGHTS. Don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in LIGHTS. That's ShipStation.com. Enter LIGHTS. ShipStation. Get ship done. All right. Speaking of Chucky, should have put this up earlier on in the news list. Trill, did you say Chucky or was that Ken Jack?
Trill.
Yes.
You referenced Chucky, and Mark Hamill is going to voice Chucky in the new Child's Play movie. Talk about just dropping news. It wasn't out of nowhere. I think it was at WonderCon. But talk about dropping like a pretty important piece of that movie a ways after the trailer came out. We never really saw the doll in the new trailer. I remember we talked about that. But Mark Hamill will voice Chucky. Crazy stuff.
Kind of weird, too, because we were just recently talking, maybe like 3 episodes ago, about how prolific of a voice actor Mark Hamill is, right?
Oh, yeah. Killing Joke. I mean, I know you mentioned that. He's incredible as a Joker.
Yeah. And in Avatar, he's the Fire Lord. Ozai, I want to say. But yeah, anyway, very good voice actor. And that definitely does drum up intrigue for me. And that's one of those things. Same thing with Guillermo del Toro, where if you get a big enough name attached to the project, it brings my interest up for any horror flick like up exponentially.
Yeah. This is a good way to get me to care about this movie almost instantaneously.
Yep, exactly what you said to us yesterday when we talked about it. I mean, the hype is going to grow for this because of this now. Smart Absolutely. Move. I mean, it's weird they waited, but now I understand it because now people are ready to go.
I wanted to see him do the voice in that announce video he did.
I know. Well, when I saw he tweeted the video, I just assumed he was doing it. He saved it, but I also get that they saved they save the reveal of the doll. I guess they're going to save the voice. You don't want to hear the voice before you see the doll. So
yeah, I agree. I agree. It's got to be in a trailer.
What if he just does a weird accent in it? That's why they're holding it back. He does Trill's terrible Australian accent version of Chucky.
He does an Eminem impersonation as
Chainsaw Killer.
Chucky.
I really, really hate the Chucky movies. I hate the Child's Play movies. It's a lot to get me to say I'm interested in seeing this and having Mark Hamill in it. It does. Aubrey Plaza too.
I like the ones with Jennifer Tilly because they became so campy. Like, they even had John Waters in one of them as just a hat tip to how campy it's become. So I like those, The Bride of Chucky and then The Seed of Chucky. And there's one on Netflix. It might have been The Seed of Chucky, actually. Spawn of Chucky, maybe. I liked it.
Seed of Chucky was a recent one released, I believe, on streaming. I think they almost reviewed it.
Real gross title, but
yeah.
Yes.
Entertaining. I won't say it's good, but it was entertaining because they had, they did the whole Ocean's 12 Julia Roberts thing with Jennifer Tilly's character, where the doll wants to kill Jennifer Tilly in order to reclaim her body. And it fit in with that movie.
The streaming one was The Cult of Chucky, I think.
Maybe that one was it.
It's like American Horror Story titles or something.
Yeah, Seed of Chucky came out in 2004 after Bride of Chucky came out in 98.
It's better than calling it like Chucky's Cum or something. Subtlety to it.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't. You make more noise that way.
Nut of Chucky.
Pizza place ever.
Chucky versus Yoda, one-on-one, who do you got?
Oh, come on.
I got Yoda. Yoda will not be intimidated by Chucky. He's just
Yoda inspired. Has Chucky inspires no one. Yoda's inspired many people. Luke, Elizabeth Holmes. I mean, just an absolute
what a wrecking crew
of people. Just a ton of people. By the way, somebody said on our Reddit, and I'm going to have to make the video of it, that Elizabeth Holmes sounds like the Eraser Vine girl.
Yes, 100%.
And she does.
Well,
there's a reason why Theranos doesn't work on your heart.
It's important to also note that Elizabeth Holmes' voice was also a fake voice.
Yes, that's true.
Maybe so was Racer Girls. We don't know.
I don't know, but ooh, I stay away from comparing it to a Racer Girl because I feel like she gets unfairly compared to Elizabeth Holmes in this case. Elizabeth Holmes was putting on that voice because it apparently worked on people. It was like an Umbrella Academy when the rumored people, except Elizabeth Holmes was just able to tell people to invest ungodly amounts of money in her company that has no proven technology behind it.
Yeah, cool. like a giant crew of people. Although some of them are relatively senile, like what's his name, Henry Kissinger, and like others like that. They're mostly very old men.
Schultz, yeah, or Scholes. Nobody beat Sonny Balwani though. What a guy. What a guy.
It's an awesome name, Sonny Balwani.
It is a cool name. It's a cool name if you don't incorporate it with fraud. Some might say. Don't have that cool name and also do a fraud.
Fraud, I must.
Next up, Ghostbusters. Some castmates confirmed. Harry Coon from many things, including
Avengers.
Avengers.
Remember that was a credit.
Yeah. Avengers Infinity War star, Carrie Coon. But they actually, I'll get to it in a second. There's another person. So Carrie Coon, I think most people would know her currently from The Leftovers. Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things and It. So he only does like these young things, I guess, but that's his age. So
he won't do a movie unless he has to ride a bicycle from another.
Yes. And then McKenna Grace, and they said Captain Marvel star McKenna Grace. They star loosely, but she is in it. She does play young Carol Danvers. She's also in I, Tonya. She played the young Tonya Harding. She's in Annabelle Comes Home. So it all ties together here.
Young
and also
Annabelle.
Also in Trill's favorite movie, the Angry Birds movie.
The first one or the second one?
The first one. Maybe she's returning for the second one. I don't know.
I hope so.
But yeah, these are some young people. young people for this new Ghostbusters. He's 12 years old. Finn Wolfhard. How old is Finn Wolfhard?
I feel like he's like 14. 16 is my guess.
16, spot on. From
Vancouver. He's 16?
Boom.
So now he doesn't have to ride a bike everywhere. He can drive his car.
That's true.
Learner's permit. Needs a parent and board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that might just be a New York thing. I really don't know.
16 driver's license in Texas. It depends where he lives. He's from Vancouver, so I don't know what the deal is up there.
In Indiana, you could get a permit at 15, but when you turned 16 and got your actual driver's license, there was a period of half a year up to a year where you couldn't have anyone else in the car unless they're over the age of 18. Mm. And if they were under the age of 18, then obviously you had to have someone over the age of 18 in there with you.
I think that's what Texas was as well.
Exactly. I think ours was you can get your learner's permit at 16 and your junior's permit, but the junior's permit, you can only drive to work in it. Like, it was really weird. It was really weird. And then full license at 17.
Going to work.
See, woke kids these days would say they're running an independent small business out of their friend's house.
Or just putting up Snapchat ads for Fit Tea.
Yeah.
I mean, true. You just say you're going to work.
Yeah, it's very true. All right, so that's the Ghostbusters news. I don't really have much of a reaction on that, but we
I like
knew
Carrie Coon.
I like Carrie Coon too, but we knew it was going to be young kids. So.
What character is she going to play? Like, where is she going to sit relative to the Ghostbusters universe?
The ghost, maybe? Maybe she voices the ghost or does mocap like she did in Avengers?
Okay.
She is the ghost. I don't know. We don't really know much about this. I do know that.
We know Jason Reitman's directing it. By the way, his sister has a solid show on Netflix called Working Moms.
There you go. She's the mother of Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace.
Carrie Coon is?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I knew her originally from The Leftovers, but I also watched and binged entirely through Fargo relatively recently. She was great in Fargo. I don't know if you guys had seen that.
Not the movie, really, that show. I hear really good things about the show Fargo. I need to watch it.
Oh, I love it. Also, my king, Jeffrey Donovan, isn't it, from Burn Notice? Michael Weston?
I feel like that'd be a good movie for Brendan Fraser to dip his toe into, or a good TV show. He's got the cowboy hat thing going. He could be a sheriff.
Oh, I thought you meant Ghostbusters. I would like him in Ghostbusters as well.
Ghostbusters, it would be great if he could play the ghost.
Ooh, I would love Brendan Fraser ghost. He's a voice actor guy now. He's Dr. Doom.
I like it. I like what we're doing here.
He plays the ghost of like Bill Cody or something. And like that's the first ghost of the bust.
There is a rumor that she might be playing the daughter of one of the original quote unquote busters.
She's the love child of the ghost blowjob with Dan Aykroyd.
Yep. That makes sense.
You gotta tie the movies together somehow.
I mean, that's not even a joke. That's exactly what they have to do.
I don't know.
That'd be hilarious if that was actually the case.
Bustin' makes me feel good.
Bustin', 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 bustin'. First we must.
Two more pieces of news in our interview. Macbeth. Denzel Washington. Frances McDormand going to star in Macbeth from Joel Cohen. I'm going to be honest. I don't care. Like, I don't care to an extent. I don't care about Macbeth.
Is that the Scottish one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Who's playing Banquo? That's what I care about. No, I don't care that much. Look, I have an appreciation for the works of William Shakespeare in the sense that I appreciate that I'm too dumb to enjoy it. And unless it's Kenneth Branagh taking on Shakespeare, I don't know. Hard sell for me.
He is taking on Shakespeare. He's playing Shakespeare in a movie I think is coming out relatively soon.
Right.
Remember?
He did a version of Othello, I think, or Macbeth. He did a movie that was a bomb in the 90s.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. He did a ton of Shakespearean stuff, I think on theater mostly too, right?
It is. If you do want to be impressed, Google the videos of Patrick Stewart back at the the Royal Shakespeare Academy or wherever him and Ian McKellen were. They trained together there, right?
Yes.
I think so. And he just like the way he talks about one line, they put so much work into that. It is so impressive. Even though most of it's lost on me, I do enjoy it.
Have you ever seen Mel Gibson's Macbeth?
No.
It's actually very good. I did enjoy it a lot for somebody that's not like the huge, a big Shakespeare fan or anything like that.
There was a Macbeth movie with Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard that came out in 2015, but that was not an American movie.
That's right.
I'm going to Google a list of movies based on Shakespeare plays.
What was the DiCaprio, Claire Danes, Romeo and Juliet? What was that called again?
I mean, it was just Romeo and Juliet. But
Romeo plus Juliet.
It was stylized.
Yeah. Plus Juliet.
We keep talking about that. I need to watch that again.
That's such a bad movie. Who played Mercutio in that?
Love Fool. Wasn't that song in that movie?
I think it was like made for the, that's probably not made for the movie, but it was definitely featured very heavily throughout the movie.
Paul Rudd was in that movie.
Yes.
John Lasagna.
John Lasagna, yes.
They 10 Things I Hate About You is a Shakespeare adaptation. I forget which Shakespearean work.
But, If you Google movies based on Shakespeare, it starts off with Romeo plus Juliet, and then it goes 10 Things I Hate About You, and then She's the Man, West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet. This dude is rolling over in his grave.
God damn, that's terrible. Not that he wrote any of that shit. Oh my God, Jamie Kennedy was in Romeo plus Juliet?
We had to read A Midsummer's Night Dream in English class, I think my sophomore year, and it was brutal. I hated it.
I would have respected Romeo and Juliet so much more had they put in the trailer based on the play by Shakespeare.
But also based on the novel pushed by Sapphire.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, 10 Things I Hate About You is the taming of the shrew.
Damn, that was an answer on Jeopardy recently. Whenever they do Shakespearean stuff on Jeopardy, I just skip it. I'm like, I don't even want to try in this. I don't know any of it.
Whenever I ask a question and I Google it, or one of us does that, I picture one of our listeners driving off of a bridge yelling at their car stereo with the answer. You damn idiots!
It's Romeo plus Juliet! You fuck!
10-car pileup on the I-95 today.
My tea's gone cold. I'm wondering why.
Playing on the wreck.
Dear LCB, I wrote you, but you ain't calling. You talked about apparel on the podcast. Well, it was calling.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Wow. On the spot. That was beautiful.
Oh, we just lost Trill.
He just hung up after that. He hung up. He mic dropped us. He just hung up after that joke. That's amazing.
We no longer have Trill on the podcast. He's back.
I exited the chat.
All right. Well, let's move on. One more piece of news. It's a very short teaser, but the Alfred Pennyworth Epics TV show teaser came out. Man, how out are you on this? I've never been so out on something after only 17 seconds.
Epics, I think that's Uverse channel 13,429. In case you're wondering how to find Epics. Is it a young Alfred or is it Alfred during? Okay, young Alfred.
No, you need to watch it now.
Yeah, definitely watch it. It's 17 seconds. It was really funny. He's like basically an OSS agent or something.
For context sake, it's worth a watch, but
I love the ending.
Like, does Epics, you have to buy something else to get Epics? Like, I have Epics, but I didn't buy Epics.
There's a troll under a bridge somewhere in the United States, and you have to find the troll and answer his three riddles. And if you do that, you get Epics.
Oh,
you
get Epics
subscription for life.
What is red and black? It's a newspaper. I didn't word it correctly.
What is the weight of a coconut?
Alfred Pennyworth. Doing the stomp thing.
My name's Alfred Pennyworth, by the way.
So this is in canon. This has to be the Michael Caine character, right? Because he's got that Michael Caine working class Cockney type accent.
Yeah, I guess.
I think he's the only. Is he the only Alfred with the hello? My name is Alfred Pennyworth.
What would you compare this to? Like another superhero franchise? Like stripping down all the stuff except for one thing.
Morbius.
What was the Agent Carter?
Yeah.
I guess that's the most similar one, right? Although Agent Carter was, I think, relatively well received, and this is not look great.
I just...
How did they get the rights to make that?
I don't know. What? And I just... Because they were like, can we make an Alfred show? And they're like, yeah, whatever.
Sure.
They just did. All they had to do was give Warner Brothers DC Comics like a coupon for 3 pizzones.
Which are back, those are back, by the way. Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes. Also, the
top of mind.
You know what's back? The word biggie at Wendy's.
What does that mean?
What?
You didn't know this?
I don't know.
Did you live in a post biggie world?
I don't know what it is.
It was their answer to supersize. And then Morgan Spurlock had to come along and ruin it.
Canceled. You don't have to say
that. Yeah. Right. And he got rid of supersize. And then Wendy's followed, got rid of biggie. And so it was the large fry or the extra large fry.
Got to admit, I never ordered anything supersized. I don't even remember it being offered.
It definitely was before your time where you would have pocket money to go do that, before you drove or anything.
Oh, yeah, here. For sure. Yeah.
Getting supersized or getting a biggie fry, saying that was so relieving because it was almost like giving up. It was nice. Yeah. It was just tapping out of life.
Yeah, there was the great biggie fry. And they put the words big across the fucking cup. Like, you knew when you got something biggie. Now it's back. Now I get the biggie bag. But it's not quite.
Damn. That was really good.
I miss those yellow Wendy's cups. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. I miss those too. Yeah. Supersize Me came out when I was, I think, 10. So, like, that was definitely a little before my realm of adult meals and not getting the kiddie meals with the cool toys.
Oh, I mean, I was definitely just old enough to be able to order food for myself. Like, it was like middle school, maybe like early, but this is bad radio, but whatever. But if you search on Google why Wendy's ain't like it used to be, this is what Frosties used to look like. I mean, they were in the yellow cups. They had the behemoth Frosties. It was
that one on the left just looks like a puddle of shit, to be frank.
It does. But I mean, those were Frosties.
Dave Thomas died and it all just, it went to shit. It got corporate.
I still love Wendy's, my favorite fast food place. Anyway,
but yeah, pizzones are back. I never never had a pizzone.
They're good.
I've been with someone who got a pizzone.
It's a calzone.
From Pizza Hut.
All right. Hold on. I'm going to have to look it up.
They're good. They're good.
P-I-Z-O-N-S. O-N-E-S. Is it that?
It's O-N...
No, pizzons. Excuse me. No, pizzones. Yeah. No, it's P-apostrophe-Z-O-N-E-S. That's a pizzone.
You guys remember the double down from KFC?
Oh, of course. Yeah,
definitely remember that.
That was like eating exactly what it sounded like.
It was 2 pieces of chicken as the bread, and it tasted like 2 pieces of chicken as the bread with stuff in between. I mean, that's
keto friendly.
not if there's like 800 calories of breading on their chicken.
Wow, this zone looks not good.
Limited time food. Might have to be something one day.
I do like KFC, but Popeyes, their breading is just so much better,
right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got that crunch. It's like eating a bowl of cornflakes.
Oh, my God. This looks like a gutted animal.
I think the my fast food bracket is going to have the Elite Eight come out tomorrow. The regional chains, they had a tough go with things, the regional change, because the voting pool is too big, but Sweet 16 is McDonald's, Whataburger, Dairy Queen, Chipotle, Chick-fil-A, Culver's, White Castle, Burger King, Taco Bell, Raising Cane's, Shake Shack, Wendy's, In-N-Out, Popeyes, Bojangles, and Five Guys. I think Taco Bell's going to win. That's my prediction.
Yeah, it's got critical mass. It's got enough people willing to vote for it. And the regionals, are regional. They have less of a voting base, and then they also have people gunning against it.
Only double-digit seed to make the Sweet 16 was Dairy Queen. It took down a 6-seed Carl's Jr. and Hardee's, and then took down 3-seed Arby's.
They got underrated chicken strips.
They do. And look, if you're going to – the restaurant is top – like if you're going to – people counted Frosty with Wendy's. You have to count the ice cream with Dairy Queen. Just how it goes. Just how it is. All right. One more ad read, I guess, and then we'll get into our We'll get into our interview here. This episode brought to you in part by Dollar Shave Club. We love that Dollar Shave Club has everything we need to look, feel, smell our best, not just for shaving. What we love even more is the fact that you never have to go to the store to buy any of this stuff. And buying razors is a pain in the ass. Buying anything, any self-grooming is a pain because they lock them all up nowadays. Someone has to come over and open up that case for you. They even lock up Fiber Energies nowadays at Walgreens. I don't drink coffee. So if I need, if I have a late night, I got to go get someone to go get a key out and open it up.
I thought you said Fiber Energy, which would be a hilarious crossover food item.
Fiber Energy, just good poop energy. they keep you fully stocked. You don't run out. Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready, no matter what you're getting ready for. They have you covered head to toe for your hair, your skin, your face, you name it. They have it. And they have this new program where they automatically keep you stocked up on products you use, which is fantastic. You determine what you want and when you want it, and it shows up right at your door from once a month to once every 6 months. You determine that. Plus, with their handsome discount, the more you buy, the more you save. And right now, you've got a bunch of starter sets that you can try for just $5, like their oral care kit. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular price. So what are you waiting for? Get your starter set for just $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/lights. That's dollarshaveclub.com/lights. Tim Simons plays Jonah Ryan on Veep. There might be spoilers here if you haven't caught up on Veep. I don't know what to tell you on that case. I don't know. If you haven't caught up on Veep and you want to watch Veep, I mean, you feel like you've had over a year to catch up. So I mean, kind of going at your own risk, but we had a lot of fun talking to him. Here's our interview with him.
Lights, Camera, Barstool. Another, well, he's in movies too, but we're talking about a TV show. One of my favorite TV shows.
Big time favorites.
Veep. Tim Simons, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
My goodness.
Thanks for having me.
Veep, final season.
Yeah, man.
Say it ain't so. I know it's so, but tell me something better. Tell me it's coming back. We just don't know that.
No, okay. There's nothing. I would even, people are like, you know what? They always bring a movie down a couple years down the line. I'm like, you know, I feel like we left the story, like we're leaving it exactly where it is and sort of artistically, like the story mm-hmm. headed where it needed to go, and it can just live in the past and we have what we have of it. And they say that. And then like in 2 years, if they're going to write a check, I'd probably be like, okay, yes, no, like whatever integrity, whatever artistic integrity I have would be out the window. And they're like, yeah.
What can we expect from this last season? Cause, and I've actually personally, I don't know about anyone else listening, I've tried to avoid seeing anything related to the movie. Like I know you guys were on Good Morning America this morning. Mm-hmm. You've been doing your press stuff. I don't want to know anything.
I definitely won't give anything away. Because I don't know, I feel like I'm the same way. Like I've even tried to avoid watching movie previews recently.
Yeah.
A friend of mine suggested to do that just so you don't know anything. You go into just like the artist involved and you go in blind to it. And so I like doing that as a fan. But I think like one thing, like the very general things I can say is that the show has always been incredibly cynical and that continues. And that this season might highlight, especially toward the end, the fact that these were never really good people. We just tricked you into thinking they were good people, and they never were. And we tricked you into liking them.
How hard is that? Because that's an interesting point to make. Because they really are all unlikable people.
Yeah,
it's got to be harder to make a show likable when part of the thing that drives it is just unlikable people.
Yeah, I don't think we've never had conversations. Truly, I don't think we've ever had conversations about how can we make these people likable. That has never come up. And I think if there's ever been a conversation, it's only how can we make them more unlikable? How can we make them behave in even more of an ill manner? And so for us, I think what we all go back to is, and we've all kind of talked about this a lot, that like we try to put enough humanity into them. Like, yes, it's a comedy, so it can't be all humanity. It can't be all heart. There has to be that level between it that allows it to be funny. But we put enough humanity into bad people that people watching can empathize with them for even like a minute. And like, I feel like that's where it comes from. You're like, oh, there's the human condition or whatever. Like that's that stuff. We just try to put enough reality and enough human stuff into them that it draws you in. but without ever thinking like, well, if they do that, they'll be unlikable. And in fact, we've only ever run toward the unlikable choices, you know?
And your character, Jonah, he probably has the craziest story arc of any character. That's got to make that character even better to play because you've done so many absurd different things for that character.
There has, I feel like, and I don't know if this is actually true, but in my head it is that like it has worked to my benefit that if, like, in those first couple seasons, if the writers were ever just sick of writing jokes about policy, they'd be like, God, I'm so sick of policy jokes. Can we just have the idiot to come in and do dumb shit? And I feel like I was the beneficiary of that. And what that led to is, like, and also, like, Arm is somebody who, I mean, like, the show blows up its own premise. I think, from what I remember, at the end of season two, the show blows up its own premise, mm-hmm. and that she's going to run for president. And Jonah's whole thing is that at the beginning is that he's the White House liaison, and that's all he cares about is working in the White House. And very early on, season three, he gets fired. Like, he just blows up the premise of the show and of these characters so early on. Mm-hmm. And that allowed for all those other ridiculous things to happen for him to go off and start an infotainment website. And then you learn about his uncle Jeff, who sort of helped start his political career, who has all this power and can basically just slot Jonah into Congress. But as I think if you had told me at the beginning of the show that this is where it was going to head to, I'd be like, that's going to strain all credibility. But obviously, the last couple years have happened, and there's no way to ignore the fact that they have. And so that doesn't really strain credibility anymore to have somebody like him. I would definitely buy if you told me at the beginning that eventually that guy gets to Congress. I'd be like, okay, cool. You can be pretty dumb and get to Congress. But I would really push back about the idea that he would end up running for president. But yeah, that's just not the world we live in anymore.
No. And I guess – and I'll skip to that question because I have that on here. And I know a lot of you have answered questions like this, mm-hmm. not even just this year, but in the past few years. Has it made it harder, the current political climate, to do this because what you're doing isn't as ridiculous maybe in some sense?
No, there was like the joke that we always said when it all first started happening is that somehow this all – everything that's been happening has made the administration in the show look aspirational. Mm-hmm. Where when you first started watching, it was like, I don't want these people anywhere near politics. But now it seems like, well, they actually would do okay. It has made it harder, I think, especially for the writers who would work on something for an entire day, wake up the next day, and something has been tweeted out at 8 a.m., Western time that blows up an entire day of work. And also we are a show that prides itself on its realism and its attempts to make it as realistic as we can and as believable as we can. And it's hard, like, now, because there are a bunch of things that in years past we would have pointed to and said, there's no way that would ever happen. So let's think of a better way to get that joke without that thing that would never happen. And those rules just don't apply anymore. The things that would tank a political career 6 years ago are not only not tanking political careers, they are helping them. So, yeah, it definitely has been harder.
Yeah, it kind of puts everything – it's a little beyond parody, which has to make it tougher for comedy writers for sure.
Yeah.
First of all, I wanted to thank you for bringing to light some of the struggle that us tall, handsome men go through. And for those of you – this is a podcast, so you can't see me. I am also 6'4 and very handsome. So you're just putting that all on the record.
And a
right now.
Lush beard.
Very lush beard. I wish you told me that you were going to have a mustache. You should have texted me before you did the interview. I had a mustache 2 days ago.
Oh, no.
2 days ago, I had a very similar mustache.
Our co-host, who he's remote.
He shamed me into shaving.
He's not here. He made fun of his mustache.
And I shaved it.
Mustache.
He shamed me into shaving.
Don't ever be shamed like that again. You should be proud of it.
I should have. It was really, really easily shamed into doing almost anything. What campaign do you think that Jonah Ryan would work for today? Because there's a lot of ones which really are beyond parody. You have like Beto O'Rourke, who stands on every single table he can find.
Yeah.
You have that guy like Buttigieg or whatever that watches porn with his mom. Like, there is so many weird candidates out there, and I feel like Jonah Ryan could fit in any of them.
He definitely would be he is somebody, because he has no integrity, he would be able to jump from any one of these campaigns and say, I am fully behind the guy who stands on the tables and on the cars. I'm fully behind that guy. And then if that guy faded, he would immediately pivot and be like, I'm fully behind the mom porn guy, and I always have been. I don't know. Like, it's so early on. I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think there are any that are crazy enough. Because, I mean, like, we could argue about Bernie Sanders all day, but you could say, like, there's still an earnestness to Bernie Sanders's whole thing that he would not fit into. He's too much of a cynic.
Not like a Beltway guy, right?
Yeah, not like that whole thing, although he's been in Congress forever.
Like a billion years.
like a billion years. I mean, he's the insider's outsider, I guess. So that's far too earnest for him to have ever done this. I think what really would I'm trying to think of, like, it would have been back in the, like, when there were like a bunch of Republicans trying to find the nomination. That's sort of where he would fit into. Like, do you remember this thing from, it's not funny anymore, but that thing from the nomination debates where they kept fucking up the entrances?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I remember I wrote that out in screenplay form and posted it, being like, we could never do anything better than what just happened. It was beyond parody. But I feel like in that sort of murderer's row of idiots, like, he would have fit in there great. You could have just plucked him into any one of those campaigns, and it would have worked perfectly.
Who's the guy from the Republican side last year or cycle, whatever, that, like, kept eating? Like, all he did was go over and eat? The guy from Ohio?
Oh, Kasich? John Kasich? Yeah, he ate a lot. Yeah. Big eater. Yeah.
Like, he would just go to eat everywhere. I could see.
Beto eats a lot, too, now. Lots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Culver's just says everywhere. Yeah.
Imagining him, like, Jonah Ryan trying to, like, do kickflips with Beto O'Rourke is, like, an absolute hilarious.
Well, so my favorite Jonah moment, and it's a small moment, and I actually just pulled it up, and I just laughed and had to control myself. It's him chopping wood in his commercial, where it's the classic gag where you couldn't chop wood, so they have someone else do it, zoomed in. What's your favorite Jonah moment? Because that's mine. Again, I just laughed almost hysterically while we were doing this pod, watching it again.
There is that is a big one. I think because for, like, at some point there were outtakes for that. At some point, it was revealed that it was just Richard who split the wood for him. But if you go down frame by frame on that thing, and this was the hope, is that somebody would go frame by frame, you can see that it is a pair of black, like, he goes to chop it, but then you can see Sam Richardson's hands. There are a pair of African-American hands attached to the axe if you go frame by frame. And I think they were hoping that people would notice that before the outtakes came out. That one, I've always been a big fan of, like, I remember, just because maybe I'm pulling this one out of a hat, because there have been, like, a lot of really fun things, like the season one thing in the mosh pit, Dan and Jonah in the mosh pit was a really fun one. But being fired, I remember working with or the director of that episode, Chris Addison, really closely, and wanting that, I mean, it was all very pie in the sky thing, but I wanted Jonah to go through the seven stages of grief in that scene of him being told he was being fired to when he was kicked out. Like, I wanted to make sure that we hit, like, anger and bargaining and sadness. I wanted to make sure we hit them all in order, and I pushed really hard for that. I don't know if it actually worked out or if that just ended up informing it, but, like, that was a really fun one, just because it was a million different things of anger and sadness and fear, and, like, those are really fun, where a million things are going on.
Him going into the focus groups, another one that
comes to Jesus.
Mind.
That one was in the episode Cuntgate. And so I think I go in and call them you Pepperidge Farm mad motherfuckers. And again, this is something that, after being on the show for a long time, you get to do, like, is that I stopped at some point asking for permission for things, and would just ask for forgiveness, because I would go in and just change things and see if they worked. Because usually our show runs behind. We are a very chaotic production. And so there's never any time to, like, hey, I have an idea. Let's discuss the idea, and then maybe we can put it into practice. It's usually just, I'm just going to try it and hope that production doesn't yell at me for costing them a lot of money. So in that one, I ran in and changed it to Cracker Barrel Cunts, and I was always so happy about that. But they were like, we say cunt like 9 times in this episode, and including I think one of my favorite line reads from Julia that's ever happened, which is, "How is the investigation going?" And she's like, "It's fine, ma'am. The investigation into who called me a cunt," like that is one of my favorite line reads of hers. So it was just like another cunt that you couldn't throw in. But I always thought Cracker Barrel Cunt, that was a fun one. And of course, it went so off the rails with Peter McNichol getting up on the table and jumping on my back. That whole run was pretty great.
When his character Richard Spleck comes in, you guys have a dynamic that is maybe the best duo in the show. Was that important for your character's development, just your presence with that show? Because you're obviously, it's not like you were a small bit role, but I feel like just between me and like friends who watched it, Jonah and Richard, it launched above everyone else.
I don't know, because I've always been such a big fan of like I think this show is really good about mixing groups of people together and sort of like, oh, we haven't seen this pairing together, so what does that look like? And so, or like we, like that was one that just really worked early on when it was thrown together. And I don't know if it was always the plan or if it was just noticed that when we were together it worked out well, but I just remember that it's always been such a great thing because like we naturally or like physically were foils. Like both of those characters are funny on their own, but when you have this sort of buoyantly positive and very earnest character who thinks everything is great and the most negative character that exists on that show, who's just all like furrowed brow and nothing's good and I hate everything, like those two together, especially when they get along, like when they actually get along as well as they do, it was always really, really fun to play those scenes. Just number one, because Sam is so incredibly talented.
So funny.
He's so funny. And he's one of those guys that like, if you didn't love him so much, you would absolutely hate him, because there is nothing you can throw at Sam Richardson that he doesn't know how to take and make better. Mm. He can accept it and make it better and throw it back in, and he's so good at that. You cannot throw him off. It's so great. And so just being able to be in scenes with him was outstanding. So I don't know, they like messing with things, but that was a thing that really worked. I don't know what it led to, but when it was happening, it was great.
You could maybe a spinoff like Joey spun off of Friends.
You know, it was really funny. I went in one time, like HBO does this thing with like interns where they like have them in for a couple weeks and they like have to like create shows that like spin-off shows or something. And then like we have to go in, they're going to get judged on their performance and their all the stuff, performance and how they were dressed and did they pitch their idea in a good way? Was all the information clear? You know, it's like for maybe freshmen in college or high school students, something like that. And because they were doing Veep and I live in LA, I went in to like be the guest judge for it, and it was awesome. And it was like all these fresh-faced kids, and they didn't know that the world's awful yet. But one of them actually pitched like a really amazing spinoff. They were like, one of these kids, I was like, man, if you're going to do it, like that's kind of the way to do it. Like that's a great, I don't even think they were writers. They were just like, oh yeah, that's perfect.
You just bring this high school kid into the exec stage. Yeah. Like, hey, I got this kid
and he's never written anything before. He's not being paid. And frankly, he doesn't even want to write this. I asked him to very nicely. And he said no, but I'm gonna force him to do it.
One more thing on Veep, because I want to get into movies here for a second. Mm-hmm. A little hint, if you look at my shirt, what movie I want to talk about.
Oh, nice.
Sports movie.
Yeah.
Favorite character, not Jonah.
Favorite character, not Jonah.
You can get sentimental about it too.
There are gonna be a bunch. Like, I'm a big fan of Dan Bacadal, who plays Roger Furlong, Sally Phillips, who plays Minna Hawkinson. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's another person that is so. I mean, she's English, and she's speaking American English in a Finnish accent, and she is British. Like, she's unbelievably talented. I've always had a soft spot for Pete Grotz, who plays Sidney Purcell, who has written by Rachel Axler, one of our writers who's incredibly talented. Rachel had this line that he said, I think in season 5, that was, he's talking to Dan, he's like, Dan, you are as useless to me as a 40-year-old woman.
Yep.
And that was one of Rachel's lines. And Pete Grotz, because everything that, like, Furlong and Pete share this in that they are inhumanly cynical, and they can say anything in that show, and it works for those characters. So I would say those three.
Does he have unlimited Sonic for life?
He has to, right?
You know what? I've never brought it up. He's got to, right? I keep forgetting. Pete Grotz is only occupied in my brain as Sidney Purcell. And so whenever I see him in the Sonic commercials, I'm like, oh, that's right. Pete does that. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to figure that out. I feel like he has an unlimited Sonic ice machine in his house.
Oh, he probably does.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, there is one more thing I do want to ask. I want to ask about the insults thrown at Jonah, because your character's now had insults thrown forever and ever.
Yeah.
And typically, like, we ask this when we have people in who have, like, famous lines. Like, when we had Haley Joel Osment, we asked, do people come up to you and just say, you know, I see dead people? Do people throw insults at you in public?
They do. I'm lucky in that most of the time people are able to separate me from the character, and there's like a lot of commiseration about like, oh, I work with a terrible person too. So like that's usually where it goes. But every once in a while you'll get one. But they're all so profane. I do feel like they are so profane that I do feel like most people have the good sense not to bring up like the cum related insults, like at the grocery store when I'm with my children. And I thank them for that.
Yeah.
I do get Jonad. There's a lot of like quick in and outs, like Jonad, and that will get thrown out every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But like if I'm just like walking down the street, I'm probably not going to respond to Jonad. You know, like that's, it's not me for trying to be a jerk. I don't want to live my life that way.
Yeah. But thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You just call me a testicle.
Draft day.
Yeah, man.
You were a scout in draft day.
I see your Baker Mayfield phone case and your thing. Our first AD is a big Baker Mayfield.
Oh, really?
Or just Browns person. He's
the Browns tight end was sitting in that chair yesterday. He was in here. David Njoku. Yeah. Do you root for the Browns now? Do you pull for the Browns at all?
I'm always going to have a soft spot for him because everybody, because we had we had a lot of access to the organization. We didn't shoot on their campus or whatever, but we had a lot of access, and I went in and like hung out with scouts for a day, and they ran me through like the gist of their job and like sort of what the great parts about it are and the terrible parts, and like the Browns were very welcoming to the whole production, and they were awesome. One thing about that movie is I think there were, because the script was written by Scott Rothman and Rajiv Joseph, and Rajiv is an incredibly successful playwright whose shows are incredible. That's just a side note. But one of the things I think they had to do as writers was that nobody in the NFL, like the NFL teams, even in this fake world of the movie, refused to lose a trade in the movie.
Wow.
So the script, I believe, had to be rewritten a little bit for that, like the quarterback who you think is going to be a bust.
Bo Callahan,
I think,
right?
Bo Callahan. Yeah. So Bo Callahan, I think when the script was first written, it was clear he was going to be a bust, but the Seahawks were like, we're not going to trade for a bust. So they had to make it a little bit more open-ended, like maybe, and because none of the teams would refuse to lose a trade in a thing that does
Bad
not
optic.
Exist.
It's good PR agents right
and,
there.
And there was, they also shot at the actual NFL draft.
Oh, yeah, you were there, right?
I
were you there?
That. Yeah. So I was there, and I won't name the school, but another school. I was in college at the time. Mm-hmm. They did interviews, and they tried to interview the guy that played Bo Callahan, thinking he was an actual NFL prospect. It was tough
That's
to watch.
Amazing. That's amazing.
It was like I remember. They were like, I don't remember him winning the Heisman. Like I always try to interview him.
Did they try with Bozeman at all? Because I think he was 38 at the time.
Well, yeah, I always forget that Chadwick Bozeman.
Yeah, Chadwick Bozeman was in it. There was a moment where, like at the draft, Roger Goodell came out and said, like, you know, with the first pick in the whatever NFL draft, like for the movie, it was. Yep. And everybody in the place was told it was for the movie. They still fucking booed him when he came out, and it made me so
amazing.
Happy.
We want to do some quick hits on some of your other movies.
Sure.
The Interview.
Yeah.
Were you scared at all after the North Korean response to that movie when it came out?
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody was a little bit. I mean, I think it all got a little. I mean, like I'm saying this now. I think it all got a little bit out of hand. I was a little bit. I mean, like, I don't run a multinational business, and I understand why they make decisions that they do. But I don't know. Are we gonna start pulling things? Yeah. We're gonna start pulling things in the United States, like. Okay, I guess North Korea gets to tell us what we get to watch. Like, I don't necessarily know that was a great precedent, although I can understand why a company makes that decision. I don't necessarily know it's a great precedent to set. I was far down enough on that call list that nobody gives a shit. Like, nobody's going to care. if I'm, but like I did get an email from somebody being like, hey, just so you know, like I
change
saw
your passwords.
Change your passwords. I saw what you get paid. There might be, like, we might be able to, like, they might be able to suss out other personal information. So just like understand that you were like your information. This is from a reporter that I know, and it was like, just so you know, there is personal information out there. Do your business to make sure that you're protected on that. So it was scary. And I think way more scary, I'm assuming. I have not talked to them about it because it really got talked about a lot, and I wasn't going to like just text them to be like, oh, hey, I also have questions. But I'm assuming it's pretty scary for those higher up the pay grade than me, for sure.
And you're in the beginning of it a lot, too. So yeah. You do get the FaceTime early. Were you part of the process at all that got Eminem to say he was gay on camera in the interview? In the beginning?
You know, when we initially...
Which is probably the craziest scene in that beginning.
It was so funny. This actually was like a big learning experience for me because I was like, oh, I'm going to be like... There was this gigantic tracking shot that when we were initially shooting it, we didn't know who the celebrity was going to be.
Oh,
and so that we were shooting this huge tracking shot of like it starts on Seth Rogen like going into the television station, being like, you got him, okay, and like he goes in, and then he's like, we got him, and then it's like you're kind of going through the entire space with people freaking out and like not being able, like, how are we gonna get him here? Is a helicopter? Oh, like this. So you go through like the back of the production thing, and you end up in the control room. It's like this 10-minute sort of tracking shot. Or this track, like these shots that sort of will all cut together into one long scene that brings us into the Eminem interview, which we find out like months later is going to be Eminem because they haven't figured out. I think it was maybe scripted for Matt Damon at some point. Like, I think so. I can't remember. Somebody like that. This was a learning experience for me when I first saw a screening of the movie. It just cut to the interview, like the actual interview with Eminem. And I was like, oh, 99% of what I did was before this. I'm not going to be in this movie at all. So there was that thing where I was like, oh, but it makes sense. Like, the movie is about two idiots who go to North Korea. You have to get to North Korea fast. And so, like, there is that thing that I sort of, like it was like a moment where I'm like, it doesn't matter how funny it was. And maybe it was funny. I'm realizing now I definitely, like, played moments of the scene. I fucked up that first scene. I didn't play the statuses correctly. It still bugs me to this day that I didn't play the statuses correctly. But yeah, we had no idea it was going to be him. And then so we ended up shooting for 2 days over Christmas with, like, responding to the specific Eminem stuff that they had filmed. So they filmed the Eminem stuff, and then we were filmed responding to it. So initially it was just Seth and I, like, in the control room being like, well, this is going good. Okay, you almost got there. And then it was like we were just kind of generally saying things that might fit into an interview that would happen. Mm. But yeah, but I wasn't a part of it. I wasn't a part of the conversations of, like, actually getting it to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
See, you handle it better than I would. If I was in a movie and seeing that I was cut from something, I'd walk out and leave.
That'd be so mad.
Throw my popcorn on the ground and leave.
You know, I think our show was good training for it because the scripts for our show have always been super long. And, like, the initial assemblies of every episode that our show has ever had have always around, like, 60 minutes. And 30 minutes have to be cut out of them. So, like, early on, we learned that half of the shit we do is going to go away. So we all kind of... Eventually, we all have egos. We all have ambition. We all want, like, our best foot forward on these things. I think that our set always operated with healthy egos and healthy ambitions. But we learned early on that, like, shit's going to get cut. And it's not cut because you suck. And it's not cut because everybody hates you. And it's not cut because an audience can't stand to see me. But, like, it's just for the better of the movie and for the better of the story. And if you follow that, everybody's going to look good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a bummer. Like, it sucks. I mean, I'm still in that movie. Like, I still say stuff. Like, but it's like a bummer when you're like, oh, God, everything I did happened before this, you know? Yeah. But you just, it's just part of it. It's part of it.
We're actually cutting this entire interview, too.
It helps the story. It helps the story of the podcast, and I get it.
We're just going to play the audio of the first episode of Veep on Sunday.
That's it.
We're going to just... play it. Yeah, that's it.
Way better than whatever I've been doing. 100%.
Two of the minds behind the interview was for one of our last questions here. Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, they're behind Future Man. You are now the probably 10th cast member of Future Man we've had on our podcast.
Really?
We love the show. We are tremendous fans of the show. And I was just curious, with Future Man being on Hulu, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference like shooting on a set with somewhere like a site like Hulu, which is a little more in like youthful stages and making original content compared to HBO, which is sort of a titan for original content?
Honestly, the it never comes up. Like, it never comes up. I don't, I mean, like, maybe you might, maybe the hotel you stay in is different. Maybe the craft services has, maybe
better craft services, Hulu or HBO.
Oh, no, HBO. Mm. But also, that's like, you know, it's like kind of like who they hire in Baltimore and then who they get in LA. It's sort of like they, it's a weird thing. Like, you never really think, like, oh, I'm shooting something for HBO or I'm shooting something for Hulu. I think you just think, like, oh, I'm here and I like this director and that's why I said yes to this. Or I thought this was funny and that's why I said yes to this. Or at least in the case of the Hulu thing, it was like, oh, my friend was directing it. I think that show's funny. So that's why I did it. Like, those things, like those big things about like HBO and Hulu, like they don't ever, you don't ever think about them because you're so busy basically being like, how do I get to set? How do I physically get myself there? Because it's in some fucking weird ass location in like Santa Clarita. So how do I physically get myself there? How do I make the scene any good at all? Like, you're so wrapped up in all the little, like the little shit that you have to do, you can't even consider like the big umbrella stuff. You know what I mean?
So taking notes here. HBO does Voss Water, Hulu does Dasani. That's the big note. Yeah, that's the big take.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah,
actually,
there we go.
You live in California. Arrowhead Water,
ooh,
worst water in the world.
I would say, I'm still never going to turn it down, but yeah. I definitely have been like, when you see like the Balladroit or whatever, the Beloit, what is that? No, Beloit's like a terrible Chicago liquor. You know what I'm talking about?
Malort. The wormwood word.
The wormwood.
So bad.
It's so terrible.
Oh, it's terrible.
But there's like one sparkling water that I see whenever that one's there. I'm like, oh, I'm in a nice place.
I was just in Reno, so it was in Arrowhead territory. And I have buddies who aren't from – my family live in California, so I know all about it. And they're like, oh, get that water. I go, no, anything else.
It is weird how Arrowhead Water – and this, I'm blowing any chance of an Arrowhead sponsorship deal. It leaves you being thirstier than when you started.
It's not good.
Like drinking salt.
We ended up with a local Lake Tahoe Reno branded water called Big Win. Which must be by like a casino.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, just playing mind games. Well, thank you so much. This was great.
This is awesome.
We got the screeners for the first two episodes, and I don't want to watch
it. I'm with you, man.
I want to watch it. I want to watch it how it was. I mean, as people who just slandered Steven Spielberg for hating on Netflix movies, I sound ridiculous saying I want to watch it how it was meant to be watched, but I do want to watch it live Sunday night.
Two things. Number one, I'm actually not fully against the idea of what Steven Spielberg is saying. I understand the arguments against it, but I think this is just I know we were like, I'm doing this right when we're wrapping.
No, it's fine.
I think that this, like, I'm somebody that came out of theater, I came out of live theater. The communal experience of watching movies together shouldn't be discounted. I get every argument why somebody would be like, you don't say bad things about Netflix. I get it. But to try to erase the communal feeling of going to see something together in a group and what that does for communities, I think is really important. So that's just my dumb thing.
Well, we love going to the movies. Yeah. So yeah.
I'm also not trying to denigrate Netflix and say that they're garbage, but...
So, yeah, now I'm back on Steven Spielberg. I'm actually not back on Steven Spielberg, because he hawked Apple's thing yesterday. Yeah. So I was very mad about that.
I didn't see
it. But I don't disagree. I will say that. We do get really mad about the whole Netflix thing because, like, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to watch Roma every day for the rest of my life, but, like, I thought it deserved respect to be nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do agree. Theaters, like, I don't like when people are like, would you pay $100 to see a new movie in your home? I wouldn't, because I like
going
to the movie theater.
No. I like going to the movie theater. There is also that other thing that I wonder, and again, like, I know this is the end of the podcast, and I'm still talking. I don't know why I'm doing this. But there is that thing, like, could you then also, like, nominate Roma for, like, best television movie? Like, you watched it at home on your television. It could, like, compete at the Emmys next year if you really wanted it to. And that's where I understand the idea of, like, release it in theaters and it becomes like a feature. Like, I understand that delineation. If Roma was like, oh, well, we lost Best Picture, let's just go win an Emmy. Like, what is, like, maybe the and look, none of these things matter. Like awards just don't matter. It's all garbage.
As a big Oscars fan, I know it
doesn't matter. So maybe we should all just be putting it all into one pot and being like, hey, what was the best thing you saw this year or whatever? But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to anything.
You should reform the Academy. That's what sounds, guys, is that your next? Is that your job after?
That's I actually just got hired. I wanted to announce it. I am now president of the Motion Picture Academy.
Wow. Wow. What a big news.
Wow. What?
Incredible.
He waited until the end of the podcast. It wouldn't have even come up if he hadn't just started talking about Netflix.
Before you go, you can, anything else you want to say about Veep, just teasing it or anything sentimental you want to say? I know this is like, it's pretty big for you guys.
I mean,
this is the chapter.
Teasing it is, it's all very cynical and dark. So it's going to be all the stuff that you expect, except some more cynical and darker. And that it has been an incredible job. The people top to bottom have been amazing. We've been doing this 7 seasons and 8 years, and I love them as much as the first day I met them. And it's a terrible thing that we don't get to be in a cast together anymore.
Well, we are very excited. So on a positive note, very excited to see you. He's a big Game of Thrones fan, and this office is big Game of Thrones fans. Everyone loves Veep too, but I'm a bigger Veep fan, and I'm bummed. Like, I don't even want to – like, there are shows like The West Wing, Arrested Development. When those shows went – like, I've actually never seen the last episode of The West Wing, and I refuse to watch it. I'll watch the last episode of Veep, but, like, I don't like seeing it.
I get you. Yeah. I get you.
Sad goodbye.
Thanks a bunch for joining us. We're very, very excited.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks to Tim Simons. That was a lot of fun. We had fun with him.
I just didn't let myself to get shamed by Tron to shaving my mustache, because then we would have both had mustaches and it would have been really cool.
Yeah.
How'd I shame you?
You shamed, well, it wasn't necessarily a mustache, but my facial hair on that Sunday pod. And I was like, damn, this really does look like shit. So I shaved completely. And then I could have been matching with him.
I think it was less the mustache. It was more the chin / under lip hair that was throwing me off.
Yeah, well, shamed regardless, and it's your fault that I didn't end up like matching with his sick both mustache and suit. His suit combination was really nice. We already tweeted that picture. He looked great.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry I made you feel that way.
Yeah, you made me feel like shit, dude.
But the beard is coming back, so you're fine.
It is. It's growing back in very steadily right now.
When he comes back for the next season of Veep, you'll have a mustache.
Yes.
A season that's definitely happening. All right. Yeah, that's it. Oh, by the way, Trill, since you haven't listened to it yet, technically, the Seattle Seahawks and other NFL teams made a stink with draft day that they could not lose a trade. They couldn't lose a fictional trade. So any trade that took place in the movie Draft Day had to be considered even for all teams. So they couldn't trade for a guy who would be deemed a bust. He had to be a good player. Yep, that was, yeah.
Whatever, man.
Ooh, song request for the end of the pod. Old Town Road by Lil Nas X.
I like that.
It's a good song. Tro likes it too.
It's a country song.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
He didn't even say yes. I know you're not going to do it.
No, you both asked for it. I'll play it.
He's going to play Calvin Harris.
Doesn't have a new song. I would.
Swedish House Mafia is next on the pod.
If he does have a new song from last week, I'm going to play it now that you just made fun of me. So,
no, I didn't say it. Trill said it.
It
wasn't his suggestion.
I think the shot was worth it.
You got it. You got in bed with him on this. That's your fault.
No, I did. I just laughed at the barb.
I don't think he has a new song. No, I'll play it. The only one I'm not going to play is that one from the TikToks.
First of all, is a song before TikTok. TikTok appropriated it. So that's a whole spiel. Forget it. Fine. I'll accept that.
We'll just say it here. 1, 2, 3. I got the horses
in the back. Our hat is matte black. Horses, something tack. And that's all.
We actually were supposed to play that. We were supposed to play that Thursday. Why? I don't think we talked about it on the pod. We didn't talk about it. We talked about it before pod.
Yeah.
My baby really likes that song.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Baby shark, do. The old people that do that on TikTok are maybe the most disturbing. That dance to that song. I hate it.
She likes Baby Shark too. She likes she likes the part where the waves splash and it goes do, the Jaws theme. She likes that more than the actual song.
I did not know that part of the song. I only knew the actual one.
It's crazy, man. Baby Shark phenomenon. James Corden did a riff on it. Josh Groban, Sophie Turner, and I think it was just them.
James Corden's typically first to everything. I'm not saying it's ever good, but he's typically the first to everything. Like, he made that Kanye parody that one time. Who was that with? That one song?
They did I Love It. which is filthy song, and he made it not filthy, and related to his show.
The Lil Pump,
yes, it was
Lil Pump.
Lil Pump,
James Corden, whatever. Can't slander him. We want to talk to him for Buster Jones.
We can't slander him. Yeah, just don't go back and listen to episode 1 through 138, James.
All right.
It's all loving. It's all loving. All right. What else? Audience question. We have time for like one. This is one that I actually can't answer because I don't do this, but I feel like Trill, and don't take this as a shot, but best chain restaurant to grab a drink at. This was upvoted enough where I felt like I had to ask this.
Like a beer?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that like chain restaurant include? It's not just like fast casual. It could be
any sit down. I feel like I know your answer, but.
You think I'm going to say Chili's?
Yes.
I'm going to say Chili's.
Okay.
I like their margaritas, to be honest. And they you can take that shaker cup if you get the top of the line margarita.
What they do, like two for Tuesdays too, right?
I don't know. I don't go there that often. They probably do. I'm sure they have a special. They BJ's Brewhouse. Guys, you've been to a BJ's.
Yeah, I got a Pazuki.
I'm not a beer guy, but I like their beer. Somebody's probably listening and say, "Oh, it's trash beer." Yeah, probably. I like trash stuff.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Chili's. I'm a Chili's guy.
Chili's bar. They have that Zeus kiosk. And
like the weird app?
Yeah, you just pay on it. So you go to the bar, you talk to them once, you get whatever you need, and then you pay on it, you're gone. You could be in and out. It's nice.
Why did I think Zeus was something else?
Maybe it is something else. Ziosk or whatever their name.
Oh, okay. I think Zeus is like a dating app. It's like an old people thing. Yeah, it is. It is Zeus.
What is it?
It's a dating site and app. 40 million singles. And the only people I've ever seen use it is old people.
Okay. Well, if you're my wife, I'm not on Zeus. So I think it's Ziosk.
That makes more sense.
All right. Yeah, I don't really. I mean, I like my niche. The only place I'm not a big alcohol or beer drinker while I eat, typically afterwards. I'm just not. It's just not my. I don't know.
It depends on the meal. If it's like a
birthday, actually, if I'm going out for a birthday, then yes. It's like there's a group, sure. But not like casual for me.
Yeah, but it feels different. Like if you got a red wine and a chili steak, that's a lot different than going to a really nice steakhouse and getting a red wine and a steak there. It's a different vibe. Or a whiskey on the rocks, bourbon on the rocks. It's the vibe. Like Chili's, I feel like it's either a beer or a margarita. Yeah. Like a mixed drink, I probably won't imbibe.
I don't really like drinking casually. Like I don't like drinking unless the intent is to get drunk, if that makes sense. Like I almost never drink, period. So it
changes with age a little bit. You know, then you want to fall asleep. Once you cross 30, you want to fall asleep after a drink. I'm done.
See, like the older I've gotten, I just want to drink less, period. Like I just like,
yeah,
I'm not a casual drinker at all. Like the only goal is to drink. It's to get drunk.
Exactly.
Friends. Yeah. But now I just don't like either. I don't. So it just, I don't know. But Chili's seems like the right answer. It seems like the right answer.
I think that would be the consensus.
Nothing else is really popping to mind. I associate Chili's with the bar area. I think that's primarily what I eat at when I go to Chili's, just because it's so quick. When I go to Outback, I'm sitting down at a table. I'm enjoying the meal. I have no problem foregoing the booths at Chili's in order to sit at a high top.
Oh, well, I will say the bar at Outback, notorious for long waits, is always a good choice.
Okay.
Yeah. You get a good meal at the bar.
I respect it.
They put a little like extender to the bar on top of the bar, and then you eat your food on that. It's like a small tray.
You know what I really want to try, though?
What?
Taco Bell Cantina.
It's amazing. Ooh. It's right by my apartment.
See, that's a place I would drink while I eat, because it's just such a slovenly experience that I feel like it would just add to it.
It's amazing. It's right across the water from you, Trill.
But they're nice.
They are very nice.
The locations are nice, so it's not the typical experience.
Nice decor. Yeah, it's It's good stuff. All right, last question here. What is one recommendation you guys can give that you've recently seen or read? So this is our buddies of the Weekly Planet do this. They say, what are you reading? Or what are you watching? What are you reading? So I guess one thing that you've watched or read recently that isn't one of our normal review things. I watched the Flat Earth documentary on Netflix today.
Oh.
Behind the Curve. It's incredible. It did not. This was suggested to me by Quigs over at Barstool, incredible video editor. Dude's a fucking genius. Video and Photoshop. He suggested it because the main guy, he's like the biggest Flat Earth celebrity, Mark Sargent. He said, you'll love just the fact that this guy, he thinks he is like the biggest celebrity in the world. He's a big celebrity in the Flat Earth community, but he thinks he's the biggest celebrity in the world, period. And you can tell he loves being well known, but it's also just a really well done documentary. I think it's like significantly better than the Theranos documentary, for example, which I found interesting, but the documentary itself wasn't like a great documentary. So Behind the Curve on Netflix, I would suggest that. It's a good watch.
Also sticking to Netflix, I forgot how to pronounce his name. The Tennessee Kid by Nate Bargatze. I forget how to pronounce it. He is hilarious. He's got this just acidic deadpan style, and it's clean, which we've talked about before. It's way harder than swearing in comedy, and he's really funny. So I enjoyed that a lot. To contrast that, never mind. I won't go into that.
No, he's very funny. Francis, who we've had on the pod before, big fan. Frankie's a big fan. A lot of people in the office talked about him. I know people love his style. So he's just killing it right now.
Really good.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of climbing documentaries. I watched this one called The Dawn Wall, which is a Netflix one. It's by one of the guys who's involved relatively in Free Solo. It was really good. It's crazy what like climbers do to me anyway, because I'm like terrified of heights, like seeing like the extent that they bring themselves. And this one has like a really cool moment where like somebody gets over a hump, and it was like very much like not like a goosebumps moment, but already like, oh shit, that's a crazy human achievement moment. Like, it's very similar to Free Solo
is very good. That and it's something that I wish we would have been able to interview Alex Honnold. We didn't have a chance to do it. There was an opportunity, but it didn't line up. But it is incredible. But I have a hard time watching any of those things where it's like, ooh, dare you to get through 5 minutes of this footage of people leaning off skyscrapers. It is tough to watch. Also, free soloing in general is nuts.
Just my hands to start sweating watching it.
It's just crazy. Accepted that you're going to most likely die doing it. Like, it's an accepted thing with being a free soloer. Is that you're just going to eventually, that's how you'll die.
What was the name of the wall he climbed? The mountain?
Oh, Capitan.
Capitan, yeah. Didn't it, the first people to scale that, didn't it take him like days?
Like a year.
A year.
A year and a half, I think.
It's nuts.
It took him 3.5 hours, I think.
So I got through Superstore, the newest episodes on Hulu, and it defaulted me into Saved by the Bell, The College Years.
Oh, okay.
And I've just been watching a few of those just, you know, before I go to bed or as I'm dozing off. And it's horrible. It's a bad show. Like, it's really bad. It only made it a season, but episode one was a pilot, and I looked it up. It aired in, I think, May, and episode two aired in like August. And between episode one and episode two, they edited out the one of the women characters and replaced them with Tiffany Amber Thiessen. They got Kelly to come back and do the show, because they knew it was such a dog, and even that couldn't save it. But the Bob Golic is on it as the RA, and that's Mike Golic's older brother.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's jacked.
I feel like all the Golics are jacked.
They're all big people.
Yeah, at the very least.
Yeah, so that's my flip side of what not to watch, even though I am watching it. I also binged in, but some of these things I fast forward through a little bit. Sex Education, I think, was on Netflix. It's a British show. It's kind of entertaining.
Oh, yeah. I heard it was really good.
Yeah, it was good. It's a good show. And then.
Did you watch Dairy Girls?
No.
You should watch Dairy Girls. I think you would like it. It's really goddamn funny.
I need to check it out. And then the other one I'm thinking about is just because I've already seen two seasons and I don't want to fall behind, is Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have not watched that. And I actually have close to no interest because it seems disgusting.
Oh, it's very disgusting.
Yeah, pass.
But Timothy Elephant.
Ollie Fawn, my man.
Timothy Elephant.
That's how I pronounce it. He does a great job. Drew Barrymore's funny. And the teenage characters are the most interesting part of the show. I forget their names, but they're very good at it too.
Did you watch Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah.
I just finished it, and I'm very pissed that there's only like whatever the two volumes of it.
There's a season and a movie, I think, right?
Yeah, the movie's not on Hulu, but whatever the two volumes, which is essentially, I guess, 26 episodes total is. And goddamn, it's a good show. I enjoy it quite a bit.
It's a weird show because it's episodic at some points where mm-hmm. like there's a lot of standalone episodes, but there's maybe five or six and what is it, 20? I forget how many episodes there are that really tell the main story. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a really cool story arc. I want to know more now and wish there was more material besides just that in the movie.
You want to know more about Vicious and Julia?
Yeah, Vicious and Spike. Spike, was it Spike? Spike Spiegel?
Spike Spiegel, yeah.
Sick name. And Jet.
Jet. Music's great in that.
Great. The intro to that song is absolutely incredible. Such good music.
What, the intros to the series?
To the show, that is, sorry.
I like the real folk blues. The real folk blues. Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know what that's, I don't remember that.
I think it's a closing song.
Oh, the closing song for every episode? That one?
I think so. I think it is. Oh, okay. Then there's another one. There's another one that's used in like one of the emotional episodes too. It's a really good song. Like something rain. I forget.
Chocolate Rain.
Yep, that would be it.
Chocolate rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. We were gonna buy, or he has a, what do you call it? What do you call those things? I was gonna say Patreon. It's not Patreon.
Cameo.
Yeah, cameo accounts. We're gonna have him sing a victory song for me to play whenever I win in Big If True. And I kind of still want to do it.
We should have him say something for the intro to the pod.
It's $30. It's really not. It's very cheap.
That really is cheap. And when you think about it, for like what you want in the grand scheme of things, we should get him to say something from the beginning of the, maybe get him to say happy birthday, Paulie.
What does LaDuca say in the beginning of Pardon My Take again? Like, this is Pardon My Take.
He presented could say,
by, I think he says, this is Pardon My Take presented by Barstool Sports. Get him to say something like that.
We could have him say something. Ooh, yeah. Okay. We got to get Taves on day to do it. He didn't tweet today. I really want to know what he was doing today.
He got name dropped by Kanye, which is cool.
Support request. Taizande does not know what Yoda noise means. Please clarify.
I got nothing. I was trying to see if he was up to anything today, but no, he's just probably working hard, making music or something.
Kanye said in the Diamonds remix, he said, hey, Kanye, we need you to go deeper than Taizande because my verses got pain, chocolate rain.
That's sick.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Damn, got name checked by fucking Kanye. That's awesome.
And he made a tweet about it too, apparently from this Google search. When I Googled Taizande and Kanye, he says, I am flattered by Kanye West's mention and I wish him the best. November 20th, 2012. That rule.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I wish him the best. Never forget, I just sent a picture to the group of Taizande at a certain red carpet premiere.
Not even going to say the name of it because I know he listens to every episode.
Not going to say the name of the movie, but it's Taizande on the red carpet of a movie from last year. And we don't want the guy listening to reply. So because we know he's out. He's looking for Ken Jack. He's gunning.
He's gunning for me right now. He's probably waiting outside my apartment with a fucking crowbar.
That's it. We're going to review Dumbo and the Beach Bum next week. Excited to review those. Not sure. Maybe we do our TV cart movie rankings. I was thinking that. We got to do plane movie rankings soon. Got a couple ideas. Made some drafts. But we'll have fun with it. Anything else before we wrap it up?
No, I think I'm all set.
I'm done. I talked a lot this episode. I apologize.
That's the podcast. I needed to get it out.
This is good. This is healthy for me.
I know we have a lot of Michigan State fans listening to the pod. Good luck. They're currently down 1 to Duke. So when you're listening to this, they'll either have made the Final Four or you'll be really sad.
Spartan Dog 94 and Spartan Dog 97. Two different generations of Michigan State fans.
Yep.
I was a senior when you were a freshman, Spartan Dog 94. Now 97. We got reversed.
All right, that's it. For Ken Jack and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. Please enjoy Old Town Road. Is that what we're going with?
Yes. Please enjoy This Club Is on Fire by Calvin Harris. Have a good week at the box office. Now the club is on fire. And these haters can't touch me. Touch me now. Then we started some riot. So my soldiers can hear me. I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is attached. Head is matted black, got the boosters black to match. Riding on a horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Riding on a tractor, lean all in my blood. Cheated on my baby. You can go and ask me. My life is a movie, bull riding in boots. Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing.